Oh, hey there, listeners and juicers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you have fallen in love with the Draw Your Dice podcast and want to help put some new fruit on the table, but don't feel comfortable making a monthly commitment, well, you can support the show via the Acast supporter feature. No gift too large, nor too small. Just click on the link in the show description and know that I am sending you the strongest hug when you do so.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
To change the very language around tabletop role-playing games, and we think that that's necessary in order to make it more accessible to a broader audience.
My name is Jeremy Gage, and welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is an educational show involving all things tabletop role-playing industry. Listen alongside me as we hear from creators, entrepreneurs, and supporters about their personal best practices, principles, and philosophies. I encourage anyone from the budding game designer to a seasoned publisher and everyone in between to sit down with us and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming to this episode of the Draw Your Dice podcast. As you heard in the intro, I am Jeremy Gage, but today is never about me. Not one episode is ever about me. Actually, that's a lie. I just released an April Fool's that is about me. So go listen to that. That's cool. But today I am really excited because I know you all have heard me talk about my ideas about live design and the ecosystem and the digital environment for RPGs. So I am really I have a profound set of guests today. They are the one of many, two of many, excuse me, joint creators of Multiverse. Whew, I can't believe they're on the show. I'd like to welcome Sarah Alfalgi and Janie Jaffe. Thank you for correcting me. Welcome to the show. As always, for those who may not know who you are, why don't you give a brief introduction of what you do with Multiverse and how you got your start in doing this whole giant endeavor for the people at home?
So I'll start with introducing Multiverse. So we are a gaming platform where you can build and play tabletop role-playing games. We allow creators to combine the beautiful pixel art library that we have with their own original campaigns and rule sets. We're bringing visuals and approachability of video games to the traditional pen and paper tabletop genre. So our goal is to really bring this cult favorite game genre to a whole new audience, and most importantly, enable the people who create those games to make a living in their passion. My name is Sarah Alfalgi. I'm the co-founder and creative director of Multiverse, and I'm joined today by the lovely Janie, who will introduce herself too.
Hi, I'm Janie Jaffe. I am a game designer and engineer at Multiverse. I, you know, sort of got started in indie tabletop RPGs, just sort of writing games, and then was hired to the team last year and have been, you know, working hard, trying to work on things around games and design and how sort of we are bringing sort of game design to like a digital space and how that changes things. And it's been a cool time.
Mm-hmm. Our company has about a team of 16 right now, give or take. And we started about last year, a little over a year now, in 2019, originally in Boston. It was me and my two other co-founders, Tariq Shehipar and Hisham Bedri. They are two fabulous MIT engineers, and I come from an illustrator background, can't code worth shit. But together we combined forces and found fabulous people like Janie to help build out this idea.
Oh, God, I love it. I'm so ready to talk today. As an additional icebreaker to this show, for the both of you, would you just give a really brief, like, journey into how you got started playing tabletop games? Maybe what was kind of the sparking idea that said, huh, multiverse should be a thing?
Yeah. On my end, I think I have a story that's very familiar to the more casual tabletop RPG gamers out there, where they listen to, you know, a podcast. For me, that was The Adventure Zone. I really, really got sucked into that, like, actual play podcast space. And it made that whole gaming scene seem very exciting and approachable. And around the same time, you know, I had my own group of nerdy friends, and all of us kind of came from, like, different corners of, you know, being a dork. Like, one only watched anime, the other one only read, like, doorstopper fantasy books, the other one, you know, super into sci-fi. And we're like, there's got to be something we can all do together, because, like, we all just really love fiction and storytelling. And for us, we thought we found that answer in D&D. And we tried playing it with mixed success, which I think is a common story for a lot of people who try TTRPGs, absolutely not knowing what they're signing up for. And we realized, like, wait, there's got to be more to this. Hold on, let's try this again. And because I was lucky enough that I have these friends who are very extra and enthusiastic and talented people, when we came back the next week to try our homebrew one shot one more time, my friend told us to all pull out our phones, and he sent out a link to us, and it looked like a mock-up of a Pokemon game, but instead it had all of our characters on the screen and, like, a little mini map. And we were, that same day, after having a failed session before, we played for 6 hours straight.
Yes.
And that was my first moment of, like, whoa, what is this? I have to know what else is out there.
How about you, Janie?
For me, I've been playing tabletop role-playing games since I was 12 years old, running, like, D&D 4th edition. Along the way, you know, similar to Sarah, I kind of threw an actual play podcast first through The Adventure Zone and then through Friends of the Table. Actually, through Friends of the Table, I was introduced to a ton of just, like, indie games and just that whole space. That was where I met a ton of other indie designers and started thinking, like, oh, hey, I could write games myself. That is, like, a thing I could do. In the background, I had been, like, learning to code and absolutely loving it. I had wanted to go into, like, game development for a long time, sort of, like, working in a very traditional studio. And then I worked at a very traditional studio, and I did not like it. and then I think I had been following the multiverse just, like, as a project for a little while, and it really excited me. And so when I saw the job posting, I was like, oh, this is a perfect, like, fit. Like, it is both game development, but also this thing that I love, this space that I love of tabletop RPGs. And, yeah, so now we're here.
Wow, I love it. I love it so much. So I guess that will lead us into sort of the meat and potatoes of all of this, multiverse. So, you know, the idea sort of started in Boston in 2019. And I believe, if I remember correctly, did you have a Kickstarter for this around that year?
So around the following year, just as, unfortunately, quarantine hit, we thought the route that we would take was launching a Kickstarter and, you know, bringing the project to people through that channel, as usually happens with tabletop RPGs. As COVID hit, we didn't know if that was the most sensitive idea, and we ended up closing it, but we still ran our closed beta, and we actually gave closed beta out to everybody who backed us, even though we didn't end up charging them because we closed down the project. And that was the start of our very strong and, you know, still going Discord community. So the folks who, you know, stuck around for those days are still playing with us today.
That's super cool. And I was, at the time, I was working at a winery for like 12 hours a day, but I was one of the people that were a part of that sort of initial want for Kickstarter push. I think I still have the email for the closed beta somewhere in my email. So what I'm saying is that I've been a fan for a very long time. I think what you're doing is very, very, very cool. And it has sort of shaped my own game design principles as I move forward in my fledgling ingenue career. I don't know what that looks like, but let's kind of talk about why the push. I know you said you were hungry for more digital space things, but maybe you could talk to us about like why the digital design principle for this, to bring tabletop into the digital space versus letting it stay in the pen and pencil space. Do you think that crosses over too much into video game territory, or what makes it different from that?
So that's a really good question, because the people who I started developing this project with, initially they were coming very much from a video game background. And for them, we are thinking about like, what does it take to pull in a new person into tabletop RPG? And what kind of visual language do people already have? And, you know, what are they reacting to strongest? And so for us, the traditional method of, you know, you read a giant rule book and you gather up all your friends and you play for 6 hours, it seemed just like a very intimidating entryway into games. And we were kind of thinking amongst ourselves, like, what does it take to really, like, bring in that next level of engagement to someone who has very little exposure. You know, I think of that friend group I originally started playing with, and to anyone who would ask, like, we were perfectly primed to be, you know, the right kind of group to get together and playing together. And yet we still had a lot of those stumbling blocks. And in my experience, you know, asking around people who did play or wanted to play, for every person who wanted to play tabletop RPGs, maybe one out of those 10 actually pulled it off. And we thought that we could kind of close that gap a bit more. Mm. I think that particularly when it comes to the kind of fiction as well that's being pushed out there, the people who dominate the space, like Wizards of the Coast, they're not really able to reach a more inclusive audience, or they're not really able to talk to them as effectively, which is so wild, because you'd think of all spaces, you know, you think of like publishing or film or, you know, video games. TTRPG doesn't require that big production budget. You can kind of be the representation you want to see. And that was very, very attractive to us, and what encouraged us to kind of like get our hands dirty and do it ourselves. What about you, Jenny?
I think the thing that really stuck out for me is like, Jeremy, is that you mentioned like video games, and I think that that is such a like an interesting space as a designer with Multiverse. And I think it was the first thing that like really hit me about the project as a whole, is that I think like there is something that changes when you are walking around a space using WASD as a character, mm-hmm. but still playing a tabletop role playing game. There is so much that like opens up there in terms of representation, in terms of item use, in terms of puzzles, in terms of all of these different things, when you have this sort of direct mode of interaction, that I think has made Multiverse a really exciting project to design for. I think like, obviously, like, I don't know, digital play is something that is important to me, just because I've never had, you know, like even my friends playing tabletop role-playing games growing up, like, lived three towns over. We would meet, like, once a month to be able to play. And so we would just, like, play for, like, 6 hours straight. It was, like, a huge blowout. It was great. But, like, I've never felt that, like, actual, you know, actual virtual tabletop, you know, things that exist, existing solutions just like aren't exciting in the same way, are often clunky and are often not like just not visually appealing, not engaging, and are often way more trouble to like actually use. And so I think that like a thing that is exciting about Multiverse is just the way that it is presenting something that is really, I think, different and new and you know, exciting, you know, as a designer.
Yeah, I think what differentiates us from other, you know, the virtual tabletops that are already out there is they are just trying to, like, one-to-one replicate the pen and paper experience and then just add, you know, room for a camera and a mic to be added to it. We are trying to change the very language around tabletop role-playing games, and we think that that's necessary in order to make it more accessible to a broader audience.
I'm so happy because fellow designer Spencer Campbell and I often are talking about this thing we've dubbed as live design, where we take he has developed games based on like the Destiny and Warframe franchises, and we talk about having design principles that examine video game aspects, MMO aspects, and trying to emulate that and change the design language in which we make games. So for him, for his light game, which is a direct, not a direct one-to-one, but a delineation or distillation of Destiny, we've been talking about like, okay, so like, what if you had a website that generated like loot and strikes and raids for people, that they like these adventure prompts that people could run at their table. Mm-hmm. And if they, you know, you could keep some sort of like member login that like, if they're using the honor system and they're like, hey, we completed this adventure, cool, you get a token. And at the end of the month for the raid, you spend all those tokens for the loot table and you get this cool, unique gun that no one else will be able to get because they haven't run that adventure. Right. So it's like, mm-hmm. is these really cool electronic design things that we both feel are not being explored from the pen and pencil space enough in the, like, this is 2021. Like,
yeah,
for as cool as Roll20 has been to help people connect internationally around the world, across the country. I agree. I've found it to be clunky in some facets and slow for other people's computers, and it just doesn't work super well in the browser medium. And to have something that's very like cool and dedicated and from the ground up thinks about digital rather than emulating pen and paper. I mean, I've been really attracted to the art style. It reminds me of stuff like Final Fantasy Tactics, Saga Frontier, Legend of Mana, like all those style of Square Enix games. And mm-hmm.
and I would say that for me is like, I love that you bring that up because I look to, you know, Final Fantasy and JRPGs, yes. Kingdom Hearts as my touchstone for a truly like love of fiction and love mm-hmm. of storytelling from games that honestly now like I'm relearning exist within like PBTA spaces and stuff. Like, you don't have to answer all the questions. I'm going to present to you a world and, you know, if you can follow along, cool, and if you can't, whatever.
Yeah.
That's a Square Enix game.
If you don't get it, that's fine, just level up.
A lot of what you're talking about, you know, you're talking about progression and automation and mm-hmm. having like that GM responsibility kind of distributed or taken over by something else that's, you know, run from an engine, and that's something we're all like very, very like hungry for at Multiverse, and we're digging into, you know, how much automation versus how little. At what point do you let the players breathe versus, you know, you let the system kind of take over the story a bit? 1 second while I plug in my charger.
Yeah, of course. Oh, okay. Actually, in the meantime, Janie, for you, the system Multiverse is designed to be highly customizable, like all across the board. And as you know, I feel like this episode is going to end up being very dedicated to Spencer and I, but how challenging is it to I don't know if you're the only one working on this. I don't know if there's a team of engineers or developers that are also forming this backbone for Multiverse. What are the challenges of that? Like you know what I mean? Like, to me, I'm like, you just designed 10 different trees and you have to shade and consider like the isometrics of all of them and like the programming behind that. I've done very small like HTML, CSS things and like
so
very little JavaScript.
So what I can say for that, we have, so my co-founder Hisham, the reason we were able to pull this off is because he is a one-man engine in kind of this amazing way where we had the art in like up front in priority with the tech from the get-go. And we chose pixel art very intentionally, not just because it has this nostalgic factor to it, but because it is highly customizable. It is low cost, low entry for other creators. And we can, you know, produce it at lightning fast speeds. And then through our engine, you know, you have these like millions of possibilities because every single asset is also recustomizable, recolored, resized, reshaped, and still all holds up at 60 FPS. You know, it's easy on your, it's easy to load up on the web, and we have a fantastic team, you know, making sure it stays that way. And that's on the art side. Regarding like making your own systems, making your own games, something that Janie and the other engineers are also very deep into. Janie herself, I will say this for you, just designed a new dice system for us and like that we can totally customize that I actually used in a game just last week. Thank you for that.
Janie, anything to add to all of that?
So yes, Sarah's right. We have a big engineering team. It's definitely not just me who are making this thing run. I think that, yeah, so like talking about the dice system a little, it has been a really, really interesting challenge sort of as someone who is both between what we call like content and product team, but in reality, it's like game design and then like coding, like working on the platform or like sort of the things that I'm straddling. What's been really interesting has been that it's a different kind of design from both points of view in that, like, I am not, you know, when I'm creating something like the dice system, right, I immediately from the get-go knew what I don't want this to be is I don't want it to be just like, okay, here's like, okay, use a 2D6 system or a D20 system or a, like, I didn't want to just give a list because I knew that that would just drive me, that would just, like, drive me wild. I would hate that so much. I'd be so annoyed. So it almost is like what I had to do, and I think that a lot of what we have to do when we're thinking about multiverse is we're thinking on like a stage above design, on a stage above game designer. It's like, how do we make tools for game designers? How do we make like the ability for game designers to make new kinds of games? And so with the dice system, it turned into this like, okay, you are like literally programming it. You're literally like defining inputs and outputs, and like you can basically, you know, we got the system to a point where you can basically make any kind of dice system that you want, and it'll work natively in Multiverse, and you can like plug in or whatever. And you know, that might change. We can't like make specific product, you know, what it's still in flux.
We're not making
promises, et cetera. But it's definitely something that we're thinking about, and that has just been so interesting from a design point of view. It just has totally changed, like, you know, how I have to think about games, and then also how I have to think about, like, you know, engineering, how I have to think about, okay, how are then these pieces fitting together? How are we passing data around? How are we handling, you know, because we have five different people, like, all connected in the same place. Anyways, it's been really interesting.
It sounds amazing.
And I bring up the dice system as, you know, just as Jenny said, like that example of, we can't just think of, we are building one game. We can't just think, we have to think of like, how could someone build a game on Multiverse and kind of go like, what's that meme of like the universe brain, like, like
galaxy like, brain just.
Yeah, galaxy brain, you know, if step one is like, like roll 20 and it's like, I just want to play the same exact thing that I can do with a handbook. It's like, we need to think a couple steps afterwards. You know, and it's a very delicate balance of like, on one hand, you want, you know, people who are very hardcore in the community, who are going to be making their own systems, who care very deeply about different styles of play. And then you're going to have users who have only maybe heard of D&D through a community episode. And we have to talk to everybody from one point of the spectrum to the other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you have a lot of like evolution in mind as it continues to progress, which is very awesome and very like technology, like for a team who's considering technology as the basis for this design, it's important to keep in mind, like, what is this product going to look like 5 years down the line, right? Because technology mm-hmm. evolves so rapidly in our current ecosystem, right?
We kind of think of it as sort of like three tiers of engagement. There's mm-hmm. the first one is going to be like you are the friend of somebody who wants to GM a game for you. You're hopping in, you know, randomly on a Saturday night. You don't really think twice about it. The second tier is maybe the person who is running the game, and maybe they tweak a couple things that from a handbook they got, and maybe they're interested in homebrewing, but most of the time they're having a lot of fun in level editor. And then the third tier would be like someone who is making games, they're writing them, you know, they're putting them on Itch.io and Kickstarter, all this stuff, and they're looking to even support themselves with games. And we want to make sure, like, all those audiences are spoken to, you know, with a lot of consideration and sensitively and with the tools that make sense for them.
I love it. You something earlier you mentioned, I don't know if this was specifically meaning for the team of Multiverse, but you talked about how content creators can make an income using the platform. Was that just for the team, or did you mean that like someone who game designs on Multiverse, is there like a marketplace that would exist
yes.
for Multiverse? Wow, that's very cool.
So for us, it's playing, it's sharing, it's streaming, and then ultimately is the marketplace aspect of it. And it's the primary reason that, you know, we were able to get funding and stuff at the start. It's because we understand that there is quite a bit of work being shared and being, you know, passed around and much loved. And people don't really realize just how much money is flowing around TTRPGs right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just barely getting a blip on the mainstream. Yeah. And we think that, like, we can lower the barriers for entry so much more. And we can also help distribute those games as be another distribution channel for a lot of those designers as well. And also rethink of like what a final product could look like, you know, thinking in terms of video games with microtransactions. You don't have to necessarily deliver a beautiful 300 page, you know, well-designed book and, you know, art objects and things like that. It can be as simple as like, oh, you're putting together, you know, these animated NPCs for someone to fight. You're selling a boss pack. You're selling, you know, like these sword designs and stuff like that. So very lots of different choices mm-hmm. that other people might not necessarily have a channel to share right now. So recognizing that need is there and very much looking forward to talking to people and starting that up, which is why our closed beta is so focused right now on the creator community. Mm-hmm. We want to talk to those people first for a reason.
Mm-hmm. It seems there's a lot of modularity in mind. Is that to say then if someone is creating assets for the Multiverse space, that there will be some sort of developer tools or something available, you know, in it?
In
this
the future.
This is the preview, so I can't, you know, I'm not asking questions to make promises, but yeah, will there be some sort of developer
tools?
That
is definitely the goal. Yeah.
Heard.
It's been part of our conversations from day one. Yeah.
Wow. Holy wow. It's amazing because recently in my podcast, we've talked a lot about this concept called itch funding or degreening. Degreening comes from another podcast. Shout out to the Brain Trust out there. But itch funding is this concept of trying to move away from Kickstarter as sort of the seen as sole body of making it in the tabletop RPG space. And so a lot of us are trying to figure out how to use itch.io to sort of supplement these crowdfunding concepts, creating sort of mm-hmm. stretch goals based on total sales rather than total pre-sales. So more like, you know, post-sale versus pre-sale. And I love that you're creating this system with sort of this, you know, to give designers another avenue to try and make it on their own, to explore their dreams. Mm-hmm. Because for like for me as a designer, I haven't finished a game yet. And I am terrified to use Kickstarter in all stretch of the imagination. But I'm really interested in itch funding. I'm really interested in what you're doing with Multiverse. And I think that's very cool. So I love that as a part of this conversation, it's also about not just the fun of game design, right? But also the business of game design, too, is something that you're keeping in sort of the forefronts of your mind, which is very awesome.
I mean, so I should also mention, like, I come from a freelance background. I've done Kickstarters before. I fundamentally understand what it's like to kind of scrap in that way as a creator. And at the same time, I've stepped into tech spaces now, and I see how quickly checks are written, you know, life-changing money is thrown around, right? And that kind of attention, it's so interesting to me because it's like you look at video games and you look at the kind of budgets needed to pull off AAA sort of like experiences. And at the same time, like you look at the top selling games and where do they start with? Where are so much of their inspiration being pulled from? The language that we know through video games began at a tabletop.
Yep.
And we kind of have to go like back to our roots to remember it's like this is where everything started. And there's definitely room to uplift these creators too, who are coming up with the most innovative ideas, who don't need, you know, super high production costs to pull it off and can continue to make like incredibly engaging games. So now we just need to bridge that gap between, you know, those communities and a broader market. And we'll probably have to tweak a little bit of the language in order to reach one group to the other. But we're quite excited for what that might look like.
You know, last little bit for this particular segment here, not that this hasn't been an absolute wellspring right now. You also mentioned streaming. So I believe I've read, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's some sort of like streaming integration with Multiverse. Is that correct?
We're working on it. which is all I can promise. But actually, just last week, I can't say who, but I can't say. So we're actually announcing we have some big announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks. If you keep your eyes peeled, I don't know when this episode's coming out, but your question may be answered soon about how connected we are to Twitch.
I'm totally cool with NDA things. You don't. If it's not on the table, it's not on the table. The beauty of audio is that I can edit it out. No, that's amazing. I like that that is also a consideration because an actual play I frequent is Critical Role.
Yeah.
Just because I'm in a sunk cost fallacy and I cannot stop watching. And
I should
classic
also say
D&D
like
sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah.
I should also say it's like the reason we're so excited with streamers as well is we are providing them a very, very visual experience.
Yes.
You know, we're talking about everything is being fully animated, making sure that a DM or actually any player too has the ability to make sure that their actions are reflected on screen in a really dynamic and exciting way. Mm-hmm. We got thousands of assets in our pixel art library and more to come, you know, as we explore other genres besides fantasy as well. And we're very, very excited to hand this over to Twitch streamers quite soon. Also, Team Multiverse streams 3 times a week on Twitch, so you guys can take a peek at what those tools look like there.
In preparation, I've been watching the farm stream for a little bit, and that has been exciting. Just to see all the customization that is available in the game currently, and that the game is like not, I'm quoting in the air, done, right? Like there's still so much more, I'm sure, assets to come. You said thousands, I'm sure there'll be 10,000s.
We have an engineering team that's as big as our art team, and it's like we have devoted just as much attention to both sides of this platform. Art is very much like at the forefront. It is not secondary.
So in this section, this is around the tabletop game design sphere, but it can also be digitally or electronically. What trends are you seeing that you're really liking within the sphere? Whatever's like maybe something that's blipping up in your social circles over and over again that you're like, man, people should explore that more, or something to that effect. Or do you feel, is there a trend that's maybe being detracting to the tabletop scene? Or last bit, is there a trend within you that you would like to speak into the ether and produce as reality for the listeners? You know, here, take this trend, someone run with it. Someone just go. Janie, I'd like to start with you.
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. I think a trend that I have really been liking. So, like, I'm someone who I got into like tabletop RPGs through Friends at the Table, and then through like, you know, meeting people through that, which is a very like, I guess you would, I don't know what the good word, a good term is for it, but I guess like the traditional thing is like story game or whatever, like very like PBTA, like indie ass indies, lyric games, all that good shit. All that good stuff.
No, you're good. Shit is fine.
And I think that a trend that I've really loved lately is actually coming out of like Sword Dream, which is a space which I have not engaged with a lot. But like something that I really like is that it feels like these two communities of designers have been like traveling in each other's direction. Like you have designers like Viditya Valetti, who you had the program recently, who's an incredible designer who's making things like 6E GM lists, which is, you know, undeniably coming from that Sword Dream, like traditional like OSR kind of framework, but is using all these creative new ideas that are that feel very like indie like story game to me. And then you have like all on the other side, like designers like Ben Roswell, you know, looking at things like machine games and breaking down like, okay, how do we add mechanical narrative crunch in a way that feels very OSR? It just feels like these communities are like trading ideas back and forth, are moving in like similar directions. And that is like the trend that I've been feeling that I want more of it. Give me more like weird narrative, crunchy games. Like I love it so much. That's not really connected to multiverse other than the fact that like we want to be able to welcome.
Yeah,
This is loose. Let your wrinkly brain just go.
Yeah.
I love RPGs.
So good. I don't know if this counts as a trend, but for me, so I've been really sinking my teeth more and more into indie games. And for me, this is more new to me. And I've been just really falling in love with people like bringing in the most unexpected fiction, the most unexpected like influences into RPG space. Like just the other day, I discovered the Fight with Spirit High School Sports RPG, which is by Story Brewers Role Playing. They did, and previously they did the Jane Austen RPG, and I'm like, I love where your mind wanders to. I am thriving here. So it's stuff like that where I'm like, I now am looking at the world with this whole new lens of like, well, what if that was an RPG? Yeah. What if that was an RPG? And it's magic.
I can't tell you how many animes I watch from like, that could be an RPG. I could totally see that. Mm-hmm. There's a friend, I don't know if anyone here is familiar with the very cool volleyball sports anime, Haikyuu.
Yes.
There is a very cool designer by the name of Kevin who's making a game called Nice Kill. And it's I haven't seen it, and I'm trying to speak it into the ether. So Kevin, if you're listening,
please, there are other
people who are excited. We need to see this game come out, dude.
Yeah. So let me tell you about Fight with Spirit. I just pulled it up, and it is, as described, it tells stories like those in sports anime, such as Free, Haikyuu, and Chiya Hafuyu. And I'm like, oh, I need that so fucking badly. 'Cause
yeah.
it feels like in TTRPG moments where you can pause the action and you can, you know, talk about, you know, where your character is pulling their strength from and all of that. And I live for it. I'm actually like in the finale of it right now. In the final few episodes. So this is like recent joy.
To the top, baby. And I love, Janie, I love what you said about sort of this trend of collaboration and iteration, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's just this constant resonance of, you know, it's one of my favorite sayings that I say a lot on this show is that knowledge is only useful when it's applied, right? And so when people release their Ashcan product out on itch, like, this is just an idea, it's playable, run with it, I'll finish it later, someone else will see that and be like, ooh, but what if I added a period piece on top of this? Like, what do I get out of this OSR period piece? You know what I mean? And I think that is one of the most beautiful things that sort of escape the more mainstream space. The DM's Guild concept is sort of that and sort of not that at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's more like, oh, wow, what if I, like, what's my next D&D times this product, right? Like, crossover this product. But what I love about the indie space is that it's full-blown ideas that are taken and twisted and melted down and put together, and these amalgamations that form really beautiful products. Like you mentioned, Viditya, several designers that I've had on this show have, like, you were mentioning the Jane Austen RPG, and I had a designer, Eli Seitz, on here, who made a game about a, 1700s, about explorers going, European explorers going to Antarctica and their whole journey of, like, making it and then dying, like, coming home.
I love that.
And it is the best journaling game that I've read in a long time. It's called The Last Place on Earth. Feel free to check it out. Eli Seitz. It's a great game. It's a great, 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 great game. It can be played with people at the table, but you can also just, like, so I'm going to just love Dote for a second just because we brought it up. So the co-op version is that you're all playing the explorers, and you have the GM plays sort of the narration through the lens of the expedition lead. But the soloing game has, you turn it on its head and you play as the expedition lead, and you sort of take on this, like, how are the explorers doing? How's Jim doing? Like, telling all these little lore questions or getting all these little lore prompts about how each of the other explorers are doing. And it has stuff like, it's your birthday today, what did the crew do for you today? And things like that. And it's good. But at the end of the game, like, it tells you up front, you're all going to die before this game is over. So with that understanding, go ahead and play. And I love games with that sort of, like, end goal and this, and that it was full. He did so much research in that he looked up all the articles of, it's based on an actual person. I don't have the game in front of me.
I have it. It's based off of Robert F. Scott's fatal 1912 expedition to the South Pole.
Jeez.
Yes. Oh, wow. I was super wrong about the year. I'm sorry, Eli. That's me trying to remember it off the rip.
I don't think they were making it in 1700. In 1700s, they were still trying to find their own ass in Europe.
I love the specificity of that. And I think that's something you see around just, like, how do we create an experience that is, like, so specific and tailored and intentional? It's like every single piece of this is going to be intentionally building towards this one specific experience that we want you to have.
There's something beautiful about, like, telling your players, this isn't about you, and seeing them kind of like liberated in that experience.
Oh my God.
Like, they don't feel, they really, really don't feel like their choices will reflect back on them. If you have that set up from the get go, I had that experience recently GMing, actually on Multiverse, a Bluebeard's Bride. And that game was hands down some of the best experience I had GMing. And I'm fairly new to that role. And some of the most, like, in character role playing I had seen, like, from my players as well. It was such a pleasure.
Before I move in, like, beyond the trend section, I'd actually like to know recently, if you could name, like, in the last 3 months, what was your favorite game, both to either run or to play in, that you've recently played, using probably the multiverse space? Like, what do you feel has been, like, a good test subject for the system? Take your time.
I could probably say my best time GMing was definitely that Bluebeard's Bride game. Where I actually did end up making, like, a whole haunted level. And I had blocked out all of the rooms. So they were more, like, the map was more symbolic. But it's, like, they had these better little clues to and details of things to react to. So it really drew out my players, and we really felt like we were in the same space together in that way. Best experience, I guess, maybe as a player, was actually in one of Janie's games. She ran Beam Saber for us.
Yes, Beam Saber.
Still thinking about. And I had kind of had this hybrid sheet. I played, I think, I don't know what the official name for it is, but it's like one of the android characters. And I'm still thinking about that character.
The artificial, yes.
Yeah, I had combined two of the playbooks together, playing as the artificial and tweaking it a bit. And, like, sometimes I'll just be going about my day and I'm like, I wonder what K2 would be doing right now. You know, there's some characters, like, they just stay with you. And it's really special when a game and a GM can draw that out of you.
Aw, I love that so much. I'm so glad that you enjoyed that game. That game was really amazing. If I can shout out here, for that game we were using the Rear Guard Squad playbook, Rear Guard by Small Planet Games, which is Ben Roswell and Caro Assertion, which is just had an incredible time playing in that game, playing in that universe. For myself, I'm going to cheat a little because it's something that we haven't played yet, but that I've been prepping and I'm really excited to play is, I'm sorry, did you say Street Magic?
Yes.
By Caro Assertion. I've been sort of like, we've been talking a lot about, like, okay, co-GMing. One of the really interesting things that I saw, when I was first, you know, sort of joining the team and watching y'all, like, run playtests, is that there's this thing, sometimes at Multiverse, they will literally have, like, multiple people signed in and, like, running GM things, quote unquote. Like, there'll be one person who'll be there who'll be the GM of the session, like, running play, et cetera, doing all the normal game GM things. And then there might be another person who is there, who is logged in, who is, like, setting up visuals, setting up effects, setting up NPCs, like, handling, like, all these little things.
Think of, like, you have the director. And then you have, like, the crew, the stage crew, kind of running around.
Exactly.
And the thing is like, we found this beautiful balance where we started giving the players those, you know, quote-unquote stage crew tools. Mm-hmm. And what is kind of amazing is, like, the players are now telling me, the GM, what they want the scene to become. And it's this really exciting feeling of, like, oh, we really are in this together. You know, they are telling me about the scene the same way I'm telling them about the scene. And we're exploring that co-GMing space more and more. And we found that it takes away a lot of that intimidation that, you know, GMs feel when they start to run games as well.
Absolutely. And so, like, when we've been thinking about, like, co-GMing, like, splitting up play, like, I think the place my mind immediately went was, like, okay, can we do GMless play on this? Can we do, like, what happens if we hand everyone the tools, if we are just sitting down at the table, like, treating this like a high fidelity whiteboard almost, right?
Yeah.
Like, making drawings, leaving notes, putting in assets, walking around, just putting NPCs down and then walking around in them with them as characters, like, what does that feel like? And so I've been doing a lot of prep just behind the scenes, trying to
can't
just
wait.
Like, figure out how to run this amazing city building game on a platform like Multiverse. So that has been really cool.
I think what's really cool about this co-GM digital aspect, GMless, GM full, whatever term we want to place here.
It's everything. It's nothing. We love it.
Destroy it, create it, and destroy it again. But I think it opens up an interesting possibility for the visual actual play space, like on Twitch and things like that, where exactly. You can have
totally
sort of this, I don't know.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Like painter or artist, like sitting your level designer as one of the members, maybe not playing, maybe not GMing, but you're starting to iterate mm-hmm. on something and they're just like feeling your flow and they start putting the brush to the scape and they're like producing mountains and NPCs that you're talking about like in real time. I just think that execution would change actual play forever. In my mind, like forever.
God, we hope so. But that's the biz dev side of me talking.
Please, money. No, I think it's both of those are very cool. Ask just because I know this isn't probably all rainbows and butterflies behind the mm-hmm. scenes, and I don't want to ask this question to like provide a chink in the armor, because that's not I think this is an amazing project, but have there been any instances of games, because on your on the website you mentioned how not every game is going to translate one-to-one or potentially not one-to-one to the multiverse phase. Have you found any types of styles of games or anything like that that multiverse kind of fights against, at least early in the process perchance? I don't know if that's been solved recently, but as customizable as it is, I can't say that everything would be perfect. So has anything been difficult, I guess, is what I'm asking, just to showcase that people are working very hard behind the scenes.
I don't think that's a negative thing to ask. I think that's a reality of what we're up to. And it would be, and I should say this because we were quite naive when we started. We're like, we're just going to translate everything. It'll be great. And we very quickly had to realize when you bring things from tabletop into this visual space, you are fundamentally changing the language.
Absolutely.
You know? And you're asking people to move around with WASD. And so when, especially people who are completely new, they're coming to Multiverse and they're bringing their kind of like bias and instincts that come from video games. So we have to really delicately balance, like, how much of that are we trying to lean into? How much of it is coming up with this new visual language? Should we be teaching people new habits? Should we be like holding back how much of an opinion the actual platform has? These are all have been like, you know, very difficult questions to figure out, and we answer with more and more and more playtests. Yeah.
This is something that I really struggled with when I first joined the team. I had a really disastrous first playtest. I was running it for a bunch of friends. I felt really bad. I was like, yeah, coming through. Like, I'm going to show you this cool platform. It's going to be great. Went terribly. Because it was that it's a different thing. It really, mm-hmm. really feels like a different thing. One of my friends, Natalie, who's a RPG designer, Natalie the Knife, likes to joke that Multiverse is a LARP platform, which I think it is kind of secretly in a few ways.
In hiding, yes.
What I found really difficult is that it is in RPGs, some ways that we, talk internally about this is that, like, in RPGs, things move at the speed of plot, in that, like, you are all sitting around a table telling a story together. The next thing isn't going to happen until you say it happens, but as soon as you are placing players in a video game level, basically, in this beautiful map space, level space, where they're using WASD to walk around, they're going to go wherever.
They scatter like roaches.
They scatter.
I want to explore this.
It just was fascinating. It was, and terrifying as a GM. It felt like I had to like split up into like six different places. I had to like be tracking. I was like, okay, someone's like running. It was literally like trying to run like a horror game too. It was the hardest thing in the world. Because it'd be like, okay, someone's like jumped into the room where I'm supposed to do a jump scare while three other people are like off in a closet somewhere. It was like the worst version of splitting the party. But I think that difference isn't necessarily negative in that, mm-hmm. After that playtest, I had a long conversation with Tiffany, who's a producer on the team and who's really, really, I think, smart and knowledgeable about design and about GMing specifically on the platform.
She's a brilliant GM, yeah.
She's brilliant. She's great. And it was just a process of like, okay, there are these little tips and tricks. There are these little like things that you need to figure out. You know, there are these little like, okay, you need to like put people into a room and give them 5 minutes just to walk around and click on things. Because mm-hmm. that's what they're going to do, and you're not going to be able to control that. You need to like do these, do this, this, and this. And so for me as a designer, it was really informative. It was like a real moment of like, okay, this is different. But it just means, what it means is that we need to design games differently. We need to think about, it both is like a generative, but it's a generative space, right? It is an open space. It is allowing us to do things, to have experiences that I haven't had in RPGs before. Of like somebody noticing something on the map, being running, and like we had another playtest that I ran where they were like being chased by an enemy or whatever, and they noticed like a corridor and they ran down the corridor and they made a check, and it was this great moment of them like seeing something in the map, seeing something in the world, mm-hmm. seeing something in the level, and then understanding it to be, you know, this thing that is happening in the game, and then responding to that and building off that together. Past that, we've been working on like, okay, how do we do non-representational levels? How do we do levels that are like being built together? How do we do, levels that are more like sets, that are more about conveying a tone, a theme, a feel, than being like, this is strictly mm-hmm. what is in the level, like, in a video game.
And I love that you bring up Ben and Caro as well, because they're actually designers in residence with us, and we've been consulting with them, and they've also been pushing like what could play in Multiverse look
Absolutely.
Like. What are these boundaries? What do we push against? What do we lean into? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating because so much of the language they were bringing to it was the language of like stage plays and stage yes. direction. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it made so much sense to me because the big aspect when you're putting on a production like that, a lot in front of a live audience, is suspension of disbelief, And so much of that is just the language of RPGs, right? It's like, I'm going to tell you some things here, and it doesn't really represent a real thing, but you're going to believe me, and we're going to go through this beautiful experience together. And that's been like, it's not video game language. It's not RPG language. It's some weird, funky hybrid in the middle that we're all figuring out together. And every time we talk to a new designer, a new writer, a new player, we learn something new about that experience. And it's both incredibly intimidating and also wildly exciting because you don't know what could happen next or who's going to push your platform in a different way. One of our biggest challenges, I guess, is like corralling our focus at the start and seeing like who we want to talk to first. We decided to talk to creators first. Who do we want to like really polish this up for at the beginning? And it's like thinking about UI, thinking about those interactions, you know, these layers and the that just they don't come up if you're designing for TTRPG. So when we go from translating a book, a player's handbook into something, you know, usable on the platform, we'll need to add things, we'll need to tweak things, remove things, and hopefully the spirit of the game will still be there and kind of renewed through the players.
Yeah. It sounds interesting to try and, as you slowly develop, discover these keywords, right? Because when we talk about, for instance, dice resolution systems and how you're saying before, I don't want to pick like D&D style D20. I don't want to pick Blades in the Dark D6, whatever. I want to be able to customize those things from whatever game I'm bringing into the space, right? So you're figuring out how to create amorphous tools while also displaying a new sort of shared language that helps say, hey, this is your dice resolution builder. These are the things that are in here. Pick your pieces. That is your game, right?
Yeah. And we can have like the levels and stuff too. It's like you can go fully representational, build out something beautiful and lush and video game like. And on the other side, you can have a completely in darkness level with just some fog animation over. And it's up to you to decide if like that's just the vibe that you're playing with. And that's the only thing that's important to your level. So on one hand, you have people that are like, I want grids. And on the other hand, you have people who are like, I want to see nothing.
Yeah, I think that like what's interesting, I think like back to your question about like adapting games, like it's sort of you have to come in it from both directions, right? In a lot of ways of both. We are thinking about like, OK, as a product, how do we support this? How do we support this? How do we support this? What features can we add? What features do people want? What features are people going to like be using and getting excited about? But then also, I think as a designer, you know, I think that there is a level of adaptation, a level of creation, I think that will open up, which is exciting, about like, okay, how do you build, you know, game tools to support real-time play? How do you build, like, just like it took, like, Tiffany sitting me down and saying, like, okay, this is what you have to do, this is what that, like, you can take that Tiffany speech and put it into a game, and putting it into the text of a game, right, and put it into the design of the game, and that is what's exciting to me, is really just about that interplay.
Has there, in sort of a follow-up to these questions, has there been anything, I know you're trying to design a space that's very, like, yes to as many things as possible. Has there been any fight back of something that you haven't been able to evolve? Like you've had to say like, we cannot emulate this thing. Has that come across the table yet?
Yes. And that thing is, no, we can't give you 5e right away. Wizards won't let us. They just simply won't. They're a very slow company.
Oh no.
Very so I mean so you have the side of people who are very excited, GMs, creators, you know, players, and they see what we're providing and they're like, I want to play this right now, I want to bring my game in, and all this stuff. And you have to also recognize that just because they're asking for it doesn't mean it's necessarily the number one thing to provide, because people only want what they know, and we're in this interesting space where maybe we can provide something they haven't seen yet. And hope that it works out. But like it's interesting where there's like a very clear safe way to do multiverse, And I think, you know, sure, maybe we can make it prettier than Roll20. Sure, we can make it more efficient, free to play, less expensive, like all of this stuff, more customizable. But like we want to push the definition of play. We mm-hmm. want to see mm-hmm. how we can expand people's vocabularies. Can we show them an experience they've just never encountered before? And we're invested in finding those answers one way or another. And if it fails, you know, whatever, we'll make a virtual tabletop. But but don't tell our investors that.
Investors, if you're listening, there's a special RSS feed. No, I'm just kidding. No, thank you. The only reason I ask sort of these more poke holes in it style questions, because I, you know, as I've said at the beginning of this, I'm very interested in this space of design and sort of the coming, I don't know if modern era is a little bit too much like of me, but like this modern era of tabletop role-playing games, we're really starting to incorporate technology. Like my imagery, because I understand that Multiverse also has plans to not only be like browser-based or mm-hmm. computer-based, but also mobile-based, like yes. iPads and
down
and
the line
phones. And, yeah, down the line. And so like me, I know people who are like, I can't do it. I can't have like my documents in a laptop or on my phone or whatever. I have to have the book in front of me with like written documents. And that's beautiful. I don't think paper mm-hmm. is ever going to disappear. Electronic is not the destroyer of paper. But I am the person who's like, I imagine seeing five people around the table, all with a tablet out, like moving around, yeah. seeing the space digitally, and they're able to adjust it. Because you mentioned accessibility before, which is the other reason me and Spencer mm-hmm. are really into this idea of digital space, because we talk about how e-readers and Mobi files for creating game books and everything like that, in addition to its own like digital ecosystem mm-hmm. and how that can help people with color blindness, how that can help people who are unable to see or maybe mm-hmm. Unable to be in a physical space. You know, I live on the second floor of a building and it's not wheelchair accessible. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And having the ability to connect in such a fluid way using technology in the tabletop space, I think is something I really strive for. Like, I'm fine with using the screen real estate of my iPad to like shift through my notes and hyperlink all of them and connect them and create my own sort of like wiki. And I know not everybody's for that. Do you think there was an apprehension at first to be like, well, we don't want to lose the, because I'm talking more to like the business side of this, right?
Yeah.
And do you think there was ever a thought in your minds about like, we want to try to say yes to as many types of people? How can we do that? But then was there another point where you're like, you know what, we are a digital form, and if there are people who can't kick with that, that's okay.
So it comes down to when you say TTRPGs are for everyone, and we genuinely believe that. We yeah. have to mean everyone. And it kind of goes back to that idea of like when people react strongly to Disney live action movies, where it's like, well, mm-hmm. if you like the original cartoon, it's still there for you. If you yeah. still want a player's handbook and you want to sit around the table and by all means, like bring a tablet if you need it. But like, I just don't understand this. If I understand your question correctly, like mm-hmm. we're not as attached to the traditional tactile yeah. feelings. I'm sure that's great. And there's a lovely thriving space for that art to object part of TTRPGs, you know, mm-hmm. the dice collectors and all of that. Mm-hmm. That's fine. We want to talk to new folks.
Yeah.
We want to talk to the folks who haven't been talked to before, and that's kind of what drives us forward. There's a lot more things to navigate when you invite more people in.
Janie, anything to add on top of that?
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't know. I think that that's a really good sentiment, and I think that, like, there are lots of people who don't feel safe going to a game at a game store,
yeah.
you know,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. like like me,
yeah,
literally
everyone on the call right now, party anywhere but the game
anywhere
store, you know,
but
like,
there.
Like, and so I think like when we think about, okay, how do we decentralize that? How do we provide mm-hmm. tools, mm-hmm. you know, for people to get access to this space that you know, that we love so much to this thing that we love so much. I think that it's really, really important. And something that I think that Multiverse is well equipped to do.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I love it. That wasn't a question to be like, yeah, that wasn't a question to be like, what about all the paper people? You know, I think
they'll be fine.
Yeah, they will be fine. And that's what I was more getting at for anyone who's listening. I think I'm very much a person who finds it easy to say no to a lot of things in life and to other people when it's not like vibing with what I'm trying to accomplish in my life. So when there are beginner designers out there who are like, well, I have to make sure that there's like this little bit for this type of player and there's this little bit for this type of player. You don't, it's going to feel weird at first to be like, well, you don't have to consider that player, especially if that's sort of like muddying what you're trying to create, right? And so even with the project as open as Multiverse, and I think it truly is open, even with what we sort of like poked at here in this last little bit, I think that it's a way more accessible platform than ever before for a lot of reasons with connectivity. And it, you know, it has its own barriers. You know, not everyone has internet access. Not everyone has the money to spend on a tablet or a phone or a computer. Mm-hmm. And those are challenges that even I think about when it comes to this sort of electronic ecosystem of live design. But it goes the other way too. Like not everyone can afford to print their book. Not everyone can afford to get that distribution to other international countries. Whereas the internet kind of solves that problem for us at a substantially cheaper cost. You know what I mean?
I mean, did the Kickstarter route, if you're trying to reach people in third world countries, they are paying more for the shipping than they are for that item.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Like for me, I understand the concerns with the costs of internet and innovation, but at the end of the day, like we are engaging in play and we can do our absolute best to make it as, you know, to lower the bar for entry as much as we can. But it comes down to like one of our main tenets is like, we want to help creators make a living making games, and it is a recreation at the end of the day. And we want to get it into as many people's hands as possible and give them that experience. As far as our plans are right now, we can't make promises, but it's like, we want Multiverse to be free to play. No one is currently paying us to have access to the product in that kind of way. And we're thinking of like, you know, what is the best way to share it? What is the best way to help promote people? It's definitely a good question. I was going to say something, and then I forgot about it.
There was something about like intention, I think, that really stood out to me. You were talking about like intention in... Am I... What?
No.
I was totally lost my train of thought. Apologies.
No, you're super good. I'm here. I'm writing. We're on the train together, and sometimes there's a really cool deer in the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember the thing I was going to bring up. I was also going to bring up responsibility around community, especially as we realize like we are trying to craft this new language together, and it's going to take a whole lot of people to help build this kind of space with us, and thinking very carefully about the kind of games we want to host, the kind of creators we elevate, the kind of voices, you know, we want to prioritize on this platform first and foremost, because they are going to set the standard for who then comes and feels welcome with us.
Definitely.
And it's a constant conversation you have to have. You're never quite done with it. And you can't ever feel quite complacent with like, did I do the right thing? Because, you know, it's an action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's touching a lot of hands for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm along for the ride. I'm here to party with Multiverse and all these. I'm just showcasing like for people who are thinking about not only game design, starting careers, trying to make game design their career, and all the different. This is another like new avenue. Like me and Spencer talk about how in the traditional format of pen and paper, like sure, you're giving like publishers dollars and jobs and stuff like that. But in a digital space, you're giving developers and coders
jobs. Give it straight to the creators. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot less middleman. There's a lot less waiting. There's a lot less, or there's a lot more tools when it comes to allowing people to feel engaged when maybe potentially they couldn't before in a pen and paper sense. To some of the examples I mentioned earlier, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why actual play podcasts like The Adventure Zone and Critical Role, Friends at the Table, have been able to reach so many people. And they created these environments where it felt safe and inviting to learn and listen and find other people with similar interests in a way that traditional like tabletop spaces genuinely haven't been or haven't understood where they were at fault, you know, like. I have been attending conventions since I was like 11 years old, since I was a wee bab, you know, and I've had to kind of like fight tooth and nail for my own little space. And I'm so happy when I see how the space has changed just over the past, you know, decade and a half. It's been so thrilling to me seeing like just like the richness and the spectrum of experiences people are now able to have in this space. It's so exciting. It's the fact that we can find each other, you know, through Patreon and Kickstarter and Indiegogo and Itch.io and all that. It's never been an easier time to be a creator, like historically, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I definitely think there is a new age of tabletop that has come across the crest of the horizon. For sure.
And that's why I think the way that you termed it, it's like, this is a modern age. Like, I mean that in every sense of the word.
This last one is a TLDR tip. A secondary lightning round where if someone didn't want to listen to the entire what is now an hour and 19 minutes of the show, they could scrub ahead, get this tip, and feel good about their day. So to both of you, usually I roll this, but my table is faulty. I keep rolling the same number on my dice no matter how many times I do this, but I think I want to do a more structured tip prompt for the two of you. So sort of thinking about this modern age of design, what are maybe some tools or resources that like someone like me, right? I'm interested, like right now I'm trying to learn how to do, learn the Swift programming language for Apple ecosystem, right? What are some like tools or resources or maybe like good people to follow that you think would help someone get into this, into thinking about designing for the digital space?
Ooh.
That is a good question.
Designing for digital space.
Take your time.
I have to check my Twitter. I have to remember.
It's me. I'm the resource.
Who can I call out?
Yeah. I mean, also, like, I'm happy for recommendations, too, because I'm just learning alongside you guys as well.
Well, you know, experience is relative, right? You look like an expert to someone else, and then someone else looks like an expert to you.
I just scrolled down my own Twitter to also get ideas, Janie, and I found your TikTok about the Suez Canal.
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah, turn to TikTok. No, but actually, though, like, I kind of amazed at how role-playing has like resurged in kind of the mainstream and that like, you know, kids have been used to, and I say kids pretty explicitly, like people who are coming up kind of, you know, already with smartphones, already having that internet language and have an ability to connect with people. They're more and more comfortable as storytellers in this like absurdly innovative ways that we're seeing on TikTok especially. And it's hard to put this in context of TTRPGs, but it makes sense in my brain where there's so many different exciting formats of conveying a story. And I'm kind of amazed by the constraints provided by TikTok as well. And the kind of idea of like bringing in music and editing and that kind of video format to it. I don't know. I guess I'm encouraging folks to push back on what they think role-playing could be and taking notes from the very alive and vibrant world around them and seeing what other people are doing. And I guess it goes back to our previous conversation of just like, is that an RPG idea? Is that an RPG idea?
And nice cue.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that there are like two parts of that really stand out to me. And I guess that these are my two tips. Like the first is just like meeting people where they are, which is just like, understand what people are using right now. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it's TikTok. Yes, it's Discord. Like, understand what the tools are that people are turning to and try and understand, one, why they're turning to those tools, and then two, how they work. Like how and I don't mean like technically, but like what does being on a Discord call bring to a conversation? So I guess like my call out is I should find that who exactly the designer is for this amazing game, but like this was one of my favorite things that I played recently. Is this Discord has ghosts in it?
Williams and Adam Bass.
Yes. It was literally my birthday party. It was like
Janie, you sweet COVID.
I was like locked down in quarantine. All my friends are all over the world, but we love playing RPGs. We came into a Discord. I just got like an ominous message at like 9 p.m. on my birthday, like join this server. And then we played this amazing game of Discord has ghosts in it, which if you haven't played, is an incredible horror game.
Incredible.
Where you are playing as an investigator in like a voice call, and you go from like room to room, and the ghost can only text. So you're in a haunted place, you're in a voice call with your other like investigators talking through things, and then there are ghosts who are typing at you. And it's
so
terrifying.
Cool.
It's so ominous and terrifying, and it uses Discord so well because I think it understands really deeply about it understands how information flows in Discord, about how what you can see and when and how that works and what it means to be in this voice call versus this one, what it feels like to sit in a Discord call and have six other people who are in there with you but muted, and like the quiet discomfort of that translating that into a horror game. And so I think that like that is what
I
that
also
is
realized
what the
that
future...
was our last meeting. me and six muted people.
Oh my gosh. but like that is what I think the future of digital play is understanding the tools that you have and then building things that are built to take what's best out of them or take what's worst out of them or take what's weirdest out of them and build new experiences with that.
I love that.
Yeah, to both your points, like the constraints in which TikTok, I always question, like, a lot of people watch Critical Role. A lot of people play D&D 5e. They listen to D&D 5e actual plays. And I think the Adventure Zone has shorter ones. But everyone kind of makes the assumption that, like, a good game lasts, like, 4 hours, right? And not everyone has 4 hours to give you for their daily lives, weekly lives, monthly, yearly, their lives, period. So like thinking about how stories are presented in different mediums, right? Like TikTok is a medium. I know some people maybe like meme on it or spoof on it. It's like, oh, you have a very short attention span or whatever. But I think there's like this really cool distillation. And
do we forget
that
Vine was 6 seconds?
Yeah. Hello. but like, it's so cool to see the people who take those constraints and still give you a full experience inside of that content, right? Mm-hmm. People who need, and I'm, you know, I don't want to knock anyone who's playing the 4 hour, 6 hour game and telling beautiful stories, because I'm sure that's happening too. But there are other games that I've been a part of where it's very meandering and like you're running 4 hours in a shopping episode and everyone's just kind of like, it's, and that's fine. It's like the beer and pretzels. You're all hanging around the table and you're just there to enjoy each other's company. But like when we think about delivering content to people, especially in a role-playing game, like it doesn't have, you can push on those time constraints, right? And then for the digital, first of all, I've also played this this Discord has a ghost in it. Great game. If you haven't played it yet, you need to play it. Oh my gosh.
Play that game.
It's so good. But yeah, understanding the digital space, the tools, and figuring out how to create game. Like, I think Adira Slattery knows a game that you play through Twitter posts. Oh God. Ooh. Is it Fastball? Funball? Oh God.
That sounds fascinating.
I can't remember. But that's how you play, like forum play through Twitter. It's designed for Twitter. So like, imagine the types of things, like people are already doing Twitter sonas, right? That's just one more step away from playing a role-playing game using Twitter sonas. And like, that lives somewhere, and that can be entertainment for people. It's another way of content creation. And I think both of these tips are very valuable for the progression of TTRPG.
And I also want to say to that point, you know, if you dislike something, study it, because you have to understand why someone else likes it. You have to realize that if you dislike something, those people are going to be very effective at talking to people you're not talking to. And it's still worth knowing that, even if you have no interest in engaging with that same audience. Yes. It really adds to your own vocabulary as a creator. It makes your own message stronger. And that is all worth learning.
Yeah. I think what's essential is like taking these things seriously. Is that like, in order to study this, in order to like understand the tools, the things that people are using, part of meeting them where they are is taking seriously the tools that they're using, not dismissing, you know, things like TikTok, you know, because it is, you know, good for the, you know, because the kids love it or whatever.
Yeah.
But
the kids love it for a reason. Someone loves it for a reason.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And especially in these, in some of the indie spaces that I've, you know, poked my head in, I have noticed this thing of like, when something gets popular enough or big enough, like now we can, you know, start to dunk on it or whatever. And I understand where some of those sentiments come from. But it's still like, they're able to reach people. And that's kind of like a beautiful thing. And that's worth celebrating to me and worth learning from to me. It doesn't have to be your cup of tea. But it doesn't also detract from you. Like, what's kind of amazing about being in such boisterous, you know, creative spaces is that, like, when one person succeeds with their game, we kind of all succeed because we're bringing in new players and new faces and new voices. And that's always something to be excited for.
This has been an episode. This has been a journey. It's been a journey, everyone. Thank you for being here. I want to thank you both so much for being here and providing the maximum amount of knowledge that the show can contain in its allotted time frame.
Like real a quick, TikTok.
This is my constraint. Real quick, give one more blurb plug-in for the both of you. Mm-hmm. Where can we find you? Hit us with the multiverse websites and all those links and things, and I will provide all those in the show notes for your access, listeners.
So one more time, we are Multiverse, a gaming platform where you can build and play tabletop role-playing games. We're allowing creators to combine beautiful pixel art library with their own original campaigns. We're interested in changing kind of the vocabulary of what it means to play TTRPG. Upcoming, you know, creator-focused marketplace. Please find us at multiverse.com, on Twitter at @PlayMultiverse. On Twitch at Multiverse, and you, of course, our Discord, discord.gg/multiverse. You can talk to me, Sarah, co-founder and creative director, at Sarah Alpha G on Twitter. And Janie, how about you? Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Janie_Jaffe, and I also write RPGs at janiejaffe.itch.io. Yes. If you like Beam Saber, which we talked about earlier, I wrote a playbook for it about being like a living weapon. It's pretty cool. The Angel, you should check that out if you like the game. And you can find me on TikTok at Janie Jaffe.
Amazing. Sarah, Janie, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on here. Everyone at home, thank you for listening. I've learned a lot listening to these two, and I hope you have too. And we will see you next time. Say bye to the people.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that's a wrap. Thank you for taking the time to sit down and hang out with Sarah, Janie, and I. We really appreciate it. You can find links and resources down below in the show notes, such as getting in touch with Sarah or Janie, or other episodes with similar topics. If you want to be a part of the conversation, please come and join the community Discord server. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Draw Your Dice Patreon, where you can get access to early releases of episodes from as soon as we interview. Thanks again for stopping by, and as always, I will catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.